Will you mind texting me how somewhere it is? Let me know when you're ready, Benjamin.
We're ready.
Let's go ahead and call our work session to order. It is Tuesday, September 1st at 6:05 PM. And you're meeting in the Cedar Coast Community Center. And we have one item on our agenda today, which is the presentation from Stan Lockhart on the Rain Choice Play. So, yeah, I will pass it to you.
You're in drive. Is it all right if I take this off and kind of turn with you towards the?
Absolutely.
Thank you for having me today. My name is Stan Lockhart, and I'm a director at Utah Rain Choice Voting. And there are lots and lots of people that are a part of this. I'm just one of the many cogs in the machine. Rain Choice Voting came to the state of Utah about, well, it was the mid-1990s. And there were Republican grassroots activists that wanted to use it in party functions like conventions and caucuses. Rain Choice Voting is actually named in Robert's Rules of Order as a great way to run elections. And that's really where it started. And I resisted it for many years because I was a part of the establishment. I couldn't have those passionate people get their way. And then we started using it in our conventions. And lo and behold, we went from 10-hour conventions down to 3-hour conventions. And I'm thinking, wait a second, there may be something to this. And then we started using it in caucuses, and we got through caucuses more quickly. And slowly over time, I became a believer in Rain Choice Voting. Here we say it's better, faster, cheaper. It works. And that comes from Amelia Powers, our county clerk. Next slide. So Rain Choice Voting, this is, you kind of have to follow the diagram here. So you start on the upper left-hand corner. Voters rank the candidates in order of preference on the ballot. And we go to the middle, voters' first choices are counted. And then if one candidate gets more than 50% of the vote, they're the winner. If no candidate gets over 50% of the vote, then you eliminate the last place candidate. And then you redistribute those votes into the remaining candidates. And then you go around in the circle again, trying to find a candidate who gets more than 50%. And you just keep doing that until you get through. Now, that works for single winner elections. It also works for multi-winner elections. The only difference is that when one candidate gets to 50% of the vote, you start over and you go through the process again. So that's Rain Choice Voting. Next slide. 2 years, so the legislature gave us a pilot for municipalities a few years ago. And in our first time around, Payson and Vineyard chose to use it. They had great success. I'm not sure if the next slide talks about some of the success. Let's try it. It may have some of the. In both of those cities, we did some exit polling. The county clerk, Amelia Powers, did some exit polling for us. And she said that, and we had a significant percentage responded, and 86% said they found Rain Choice Voting very much or somewhat easy to use. Only 4.2% found it not at all easy to use. 82.5% of voters said that our Rain Choice Voting should be used in future elections. They really liked using it. Next slide. It was positive for the candidates as well, so we went and surveyed the candidates who participated in those elections. And 87.5% reported a positive impression of Rain Choice Voting. No candidates reported a negative impression. 75% of candidates, so that means some of the losing candidates had to do this as well, said they'd like to see Rain Choice Voting used continue using it in those elections. Next slide. So in the last legislative session, we did a resolution commending Payson and Vineyard for using Rain Choice Voting, and also Utah County election officials who did a marvelous job for conducting the first ever Rain Choice Voting elections in state history. In addition, legislators and the governor officially encouraged all 249 cities and towns throughout Utah to adopt Rain Choice Voting for upcoming municipal elections. You might ask yourself, why would they do that? And the answer is, they are trying to figure out if Rain Choice Voting will work in partisan elections. We've had years and years and years now of discussion at the legislature. on ranked choice voting. If you, there is no perfect system of elections, but if you put the merits of ranked choice voting up against the merits of plurality voting, very quickly you could come to the conclusion that there are more merits to ranked choice voting than there are to plurality voting. And so as legislators attuned into that, they said, well, should we be using this in partisan elections? And the biggest argument against it is, we know it works well in other places, but we just don't know if our Utah voters will like it or not. And so that's why we're doing this, the city, the municipal pilot, is to see if our voters like it as much as voters do in other places where it's used. And our first time around, they loved it. They thought it was great. Next slide. Unsolicited. I mean, I hadn't even had a conversation with the governor, nor had anybody else in our group. But unsolicited, about 3 weeks ago, the governor just says in the newspaper, ranked choice voting is something I would support. I think it has advantages. If I can't be your first choice, I want to be your second choice. So I think it brings a more civil campaign, and I think that's a good thing, and we can concentrate really on the issues at hand. We appreciate that. We, of course, immediately we put it into our slide deck. Next slide. So why ranked choice voting? Well, there's taxpayer savings. For, in municipal elections, you only have to have one election. And so taxpayer dollars are saved by allowing the city to hold one election in November, when, by the way, the majority of your voters vote, rather than two elections where you have a very small percentage of the registered voters voting in those primaries. They're shorter, they're less expensive campaigns. The candidates can focus on a single election in November rather than an August primary followed by a November election. Candidates file later, so they're filing in August instead of June, and it makes it more compact. The mayor of Draper, Troy Walker, when I was explaining it to him not too long ago, he said, well, Stan, I had to basically raise a bunch of money, run a primary, and then the very person that I was having to compete against in the primary or in the general election, I have to run exactly the same election in November, spend almost the same amount of money, and it could have been so much easier if I just had to do it once. And he's right. ESNS, the voting equipment that the state of Utah contract and used by Utah County, is capable and does run ranked choice voting elections. Next slide. Voters more fully express their will. This is what I like the best about ranked choice voting. When you look at our representative republic that America's founders created for us, they essentially said, we want voters to choose their elected representatives, and those representatives will make much of the decisions in government for them. And many times you see voters under a plurality system getting disenfranchised. So for instance, in the Democratic presidential primary on Super Tuesday, a lot of the voting was vote by mail. Within about 4 days of that Super Tuesday, a handful of candidates dropped out. Every one of those voters that voted for one of the candidates who dropped out were totally disenfranchised. And if they had used ranked choice voting, their number twos could still have been counted, and their will could have been expressed. And that's what's great about being able to fully express your will. Sometimes you really like one candidate, but you don't mind another candidate. You can say, yeah, that could be my second choice. But if you don't have that option, then if your candidate goes out at the very beginning of a race, then you really kind of are left without a say in the final outcome. You get a majority vote. That has become increasingly important as we look at our partisan system. We had four candidates running in three elections in the Republican primary this past June, and we had one candidate win with 31% of the vote, another candidate won with almost 36% of the vote, and another candidate won with 43% of the vote. Now, I'm not sure that 50% is the magic number to make a valid election, but when somebody wins with 31% of the vote, you've got to wonder if they truly are the preferred option by the majority of the people. It eliminates the spoiler effect. So one of the things that happens in plurality voting is that long-shot candidates can draw away votes from a candidate who's preferred by the most voters. So there are times where, I'll give you a scenario. In Utah, that's more conservative, you'll have a Republican and a Democrat run, You'll have the Democrats encourage a Libertarian candidate to file. A Libertarian candidate will get just enough of the vote in these swing districts where the Democrat ends up winning. And that's called a spoiler effect. So there are times where you might actually recruit candidates to run against yourself in order to give you a better chance of winning under plurality voting. The other thing that happens is that you can get vote splitting. So if you have four candidates running in a race, and let's just say three of them are brothers, and they've all grown up in the same place, they all have the same background, they have the same philosophical beliefs, and then you have a one-issue candidate over there, those three candidates can split the vote, and the candidate, the one-issue candidate, can end up winning. And those are just some of the weaknesses of plurality elections. Those are solved with ranked choice voting. Truly, the person who has the broadest and deepest support gets elected when you use ranked choice voting. Next slide. So this is a little outdated. The actual deadline for making a decision is April 15th, 2021. And then you submit a resolution to the state elections office informing them of your decision. And then it runs just like you would run a plurality election. You contract with Amelia Powers and the county clerk, and she'll run a ranked choice voting election for you. She actually has said many, many times she would encourage all Utah County cities to use ranked choice voting. It works like a charm. So, next slide. And again, Amelia Powers, she's the one that gave us our tagline, better, faster, cheaper, it works. That's my presentation.
Thank you, Stan. Questions from the council? I don't have any questions. I'm just going to say I was the precinct chair when we had our caucus meetings a couple years ago when we used the ranked choice voting. We were out of that meeting in less than an hour because it is so streamlined and it really does help you choose the person that most people want the position. And it is so fast and it's so easy and everybody understands it quickly. So I'm personally in favor of ranked choice voting.
So I was really against it for a long time, and then I decided to use a scientific method, which is come up with a hypothesis and test it. Mm-hmm. And the more I tested it, the more I said, I think I'm on the wrong side of this. Ranked choice voting works really well. It's a little, if you don't use ES&S election equipment, in caucuses sometimes we have to count by hand. It's just a tad bit longer.
Yeah.
But for the voter, it's so much easier. Mm-hmm.
I thought it worked great at the state convention this year. It was fantastic. It was straightforward. I wasn't sure about it when I think Lori Holdaway presented to us last year, and we considered it, but now having personally experienced it, I thought it was great.
So, is there a statute of any sort that we have to hold primaries?
Yes, we have. Certain number of candidates. We can't have more than two for each seat they get to on the general.
Right, on the general. But if you eliminate a primary, I mean, say that in August when you submit to seat candidates, there's 20 people. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems a little unruly for 20 people, for, you know, or even 10 on the final election in November. So.
I think that's where Stan was saying the ranked choice voting, it actually works pretty well because it would list, you can chime in if I got it wrong, it would list all the candidates, even if you had 20, and people would be able to rank them on their preference. So that way, as it goes through and it is getting rid of that bottom candidate. And I know Amelia said that the system is great. It's all electronic, it's all automatic. She doesn't have to manually do this at all. Is figuring out who those top vote getters are going as it eliminates the bottom vote getters. And so it doesn't really matter how many people are on the ballot because electronically the system is doing all of that counting for you.
Yeah, I understand, but I'm just wondering.
Council member, I think I know where you're going with this. Even when I became an advocate for it, I used to always say, if there's over 10 or 12 candidates, how in the world do you rank number 14, number 15? Right. You just have to do that. Is that kind of
I'm kind of thinking, like, how do you even rank past four?
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
Seriously.
So it's a challenge in plurality elections, too. How do you choose between 15 candidates? So it's not really reserved for the methodology so much as when you have a lot of candidates, it's hard to choose. But to your point, it is hard to choose the farther down you go. Nobody is obligated to choose all the way down. So if you only know four people who are running and you want to rank those four and not the rest of them, you're welcome to do so. The only risk you have is that you might have an exhausted ballot before you get to the primaries. That's the only risk you have. But you don't have to rank them all. And so the real issue with having lots of candidates is how to get them in front of the public. So how do you have a debate when there are 15 candidates?
Yeah, that's the other problem. I mean, so at least during the primary, you limit it to two, and then you got 3 months to say, okay, they're going to challenge, you know, these two against, well, versus all the way to the very end, you're fighting for, I mean, that's not just 15, but let's say it's eight, it's still a lot.
Yeah, Lehigh had 16 candidates run for three council seats 2 years ago. And as I talked to them, it was just hard to get those people in front of them. And I understand the argument, but here's the counter argument to narrowing it down to two when you have a large number. So few people vote in our primaries.
No, I'm not.
It's just really
so true.
If you're, and again, there's no perfect system of elections. So you've got a trade-off of every issue you bring up. And the trade-off is, do I want a very small group of people picking my finalists? Or do I want to have the most people picking from a larger group? And that really is the trade-off.
And I would say one of the things that I really like about it, and I know 2 years ago we did talk about this, we were a little worried about being one of the guinea pig cities, and I'm glad we kind of think we passed our election. We only have 3 candidates for 3 seats. So, but one of the things I really like about it, and Governor Herbert mentioned this in his statement, is because you can be somebody's number two or number three pick, it does reduce the incivility that you can see in elections, because now you're no longer necessarily fighting against each other. Somebody says, I'm voting for this person, you're not going to disparage that person if you want to be your number two.
Mayor, did you see that video? I think there were candidates in Maine, and it was two candidates doing a campaign video together, and they're like, hey, I want to be your number one, and I'll be your number two, or I'll be your number one, and I'll be your number two. And it was really neat to see them working together. I think the boys, you know, with traditional campaigning, I thought it was cool. You know, I suggest checking that out. It was interesting.
I'll have to look at that. That would be great. But to your point, I'm aware you could have a very large shield of candidates in general. And I don't believe my art recorder is here, Chandler. Called me. Has she ever expressed any concerns about, I'm assuming not, since the county really takes care of it all.
The only concern she's expressed is, at least to me, is the education factor to Republicans. It is a new thing, but it sounds like we're well paced in there. I don't think it's that difficult to get ahead of, but I do think that's from the success standpoint. That's like a big awesome. But there are materials that are available to help. So,
it was my understanding that Amelia took on that educational role last time, and I'm assuming she's still willing to do that going forward. But it was nice because then the communication is the same to all cities regardless of who's running the program.
So how do we ensure the accuracy of an election? I mean, it's all based on software and things. Do we purchase the software? Does it run through a party?
It's all contracted through the county. It's that this BSNS company. So it's all done through the county, just similar to like what we were doing in the last election, where you're doing plurality voting registers going through. It's all done. So it's through their software, through their contract,
and it's all on. So if you want to audit it and ensure it's done correctly, anonymously, it's not, it's the, you don't have a name to be, you can see that.
And I believe that candidates can still have poll watchers and all of that as well. But we haven't counted our own ballots in many years. I mean, we've talked to the county.
We haven't had an election.
Well, that's true. I was going to say, we moved to the county in 2014.
I think that was the last election that we had poll watchers in our building for. I mean, we're the county. Is that the one the gentleman showed up with the ukulele?
I believe so.
Yeah, that's been maybe 2015.
Do you know, Steph, is the county required to cease to participate in the range choice voting to help pay for any of that equipment, or that's their mistake?
No, so ranked choice voting is embedded in the ESNS equipment that they have, so there's no additional cost to you.
Okay.
And so here's the issue that people sometimes were, I'm trying to divine the question sometimes from my, at the end of the evening, you run a ranked choice vote election the same way you do a plurality election. It's just a different calculation, right? So you have the machine come up with the election results at the end of the night, and then because it's all vote by mail, you still have to wait several days before you actually figure out what the true vote is. It's just exactly the same with ranked choice voting. At the end of the evening, you run a ranked choice voting calculation, and you can say who won at the end of that evening, but you still need to wait for all the ballots to come in before you get the true winners. And it's a more complex calculation. So some people think we'll probably accept that, but the public's already accepted vote by mail and the fact that they're willing to wait till after election night for the results. It's not really the manner by which you got the election and things that happen.
Yeah, I don't think that voter makes too much of a difference other than their ranking, because that's just choosing one.
Now the state has money reserved for cities that do this for voter education. So if you guys would like to have your own video, which both Payson and Ginger did, do that. And they did a really good job of just letting citizens. So I've been watching this argument for a long time. And the argument essentially is that voters are too stupid to figure out how to rank their votes. And the truth is they're not. They get it immediately. And it's not difficult at all. But for some reason that still comes up as being an issue. And if I were city manager, it'd be the first thing I'd worry about. Because the whole idea of elections is that people get to make informed decisions. And so you don't want to take a chance that somehow they're not making an informed decision. Our founders said that an informed citizenry was critical to maintaining our republic that we have. So you've got to make sure that they know what they're doing. But they figure it out so easy. In the Republican convention, they did an exit poll. They had 3,700 delegates, and 1,100 of them returned to the poll. And 72% of that 1,100 said, we got to do this next time. What we discovered is that if you've never used ranked choice voting, you're a bit hesitant. As soon as you use it, you like it.
Any other questions? Obviously, we have some time before we have to make this decision, and it's not until April 15th we need some resolution.
I have a handout that I sent to that I sent out. It's a one pager. Okay. Here's what I've invited you to do over the next several weeks as you're just kind of mulling this over. And by the way, I think it would be awesome. We have a little piece of software called Rankit that if you'd like to do some ranked choice vote elections on your website and have your citizens practice a little bit, we'd love to let you do that. You know, out of these five things we do as a city, which ones do you like best, or those types of things. And we can do several of those to get people familiar, because once they see it in action, they really, really like it. But here's what I would tell you. I guess what I'm really telling you is I'm getting old and I can't actually see the stuff there. But on the right side, we've got 10 merits of ranked choice voting. Most of the time, people stay kind of at the 30,000 foot view and say, look, it provides more stability because you've got an incentive not to go attack your opponent. It's all true. Or they'll say, you get your majority votes, you get over 50%.
Wow.
I think there's a wedding reception upstairs.
Yeah, but I'm not really sure what that was.
And what we've done is instead of just using those ones that are used all the time, we've got a little bit deeper into merits that you might not think of right off the bat. And so if you go through those 10 merits, if you have any questions about them, you can reach out to me and I'm happy to answer it. My contact information is on the bottom of that. The other thing that's happening in the legislature this coming session, they're going to run legislation to use this in partisan primaries. This plurality issue is causing some real angst amongst those that are experts in elections. Do we want 31% to be the standard by which people win? Oh, by the way, if there have been five candidates running, somebody may have gotten 21% and won that election. And at what point in time does it become such a small plurality of voters saying yes that it really isn't an indication of what the voters want? And so they want to try to solve that problem. There are a variety, they can have runoff elections, but they're really expensive. And I know that the bill is going to be run in a specific effort to address this plurality issue that we've been seeing in our partisan primaries. Let me give you one more example of how ranked choice voting would help our elections. In the 2016 election, and I'm a Republican, I voted for the Republican, but what happened was we had Evan McMullen come to town and make the case that he was better than Donald Trump. And immediately his popularity started skyrocketing. And when it got to a little over 20%, the Trump campaign started saying, a vote for McMullen is a vote for Hillary. And immediately his trend stopped and he stagnated and then he fell down a little bit. So it's the calculations you have to make in plurality voting, where sometimes you have to vote for someone, you have to vote against someone before someone, that causes us to say there's got to be a better way. Under ranked choice voting, if you really wanted Evan McMullen, you could put him first. You could, and if you were a Republican or didn't want Hillary, you could put Trump second and Hillary third, and none of that would have affected. You could have fully expressed your desire, whereas in plurality voting, you just really can't fully express your desire sometimes because there's somebody else that might get in if I don't vote for somebody else. Third parties like it because sometimes we vote for the Republican or the Democrat because they're the only two that have a chance. And our minority parties believe that if we use ranked choice voting, that they have a better shot. I have looked at tons of elections. Minority candidates that are getting 5% today have 0% chance of winning those elections. But they do have a chance of figuring out who their supporters really are. And that's important to them.
Thank you, Sam. We'll go through this and keep talking about it and make sure that we decide to move forward. That your best estimate. I appreciate the time. Thank you, Matt. Thank you.
Can I just say one more
thing? Absolutely.
I know we're at the end of the meeting and I'm first and last, but I'd encourage you to bring in Amelia Powers and just have her come and talk to you about why she's so in favor of it. And maybe have her bring Josh her reflections. Josh.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. So we will move on to our regularly noticed agenda. When we start council meeting at 7, council, we are actually going to ask you to table item number 7, since this was Councilmember Smith's item that she wanted to discuss, and she's upstairs for her daughter's wedding tonight. So we'll just have the one item on the agenda tonight, which is the events of many city code and additional permitted uses in the SD1 zone. So, Chairman, do you want to give a rundown on that?
Yeah. So the Planning Commission considered last Tuesday night a proposal that would, the city received an application for a spot that we have that's been open for commercial use for quite some time. This building right here is the Marco's Pizza and the Great Lips, and they are sandwiched on both ends of the building. There's actually two more shells inside internally to that building that are waiting to be used for commercial purposes. The building was built in 2015, and those two shells have sat vacant for 5 years. And the application that we got was for, it's a very simple business, but it's just an ATM. It's nothing spectacular, nothing that's going to draw the masses to Cedarville, but it is a service to the community. But the problem with that ATM room is that it's not allowed in this district of the SC1 zone. So we considered ways, The thought process was, and I talked to the mayor about this, I may have talked to a few of you about this, but to have a building sit vacant for 5 years obviously demonstrates that there's difficulty filling space. So the question is, do you reject the application that came in based on the fact that it's not an approved use in that district, or do you look at the application saying, how can we work with this application and recognizing the limitations of the space? I chose the latter in saying, let's look at the limitations of the space and seeing what the city we can do to help with this application. The proposal we made to the Planning Commission basically stated that when a building is built and receives a CFO, If that building sits vacant for 4 years, then the city council can consider alternate uses for that, or applications for alternate uses that may not be found in that sub-district, as long as it's approved use in an adjacent sub-district. So let me go over the sub-district real fast. Our commercial zone is this, what appears to be undeveloped land, this undeveloped land, and then back to this strip here, all of it. So it's kind of this upside-down Utah shape. There's three sub-districts. The very back end, as it's on the east end, this is the office sub-district, half of which is a church. Then you have these two buildings. You have the Charleston, and you have Lexington Heights, which is a very conglomeration of various businesses, dental offices, I think there's a dance studio in there. And then the middle portion is the mixed-use office retail sub-district. And it used to be, well, it is this retention pond, this undeveloped port parcel in the northeast of the northwest of the roundabout, and then it used to be majority of Cedar Canyon. That has since been rezoned as PD1 as part of that settlement agreement with that group. And then finally, the retail district is pretty much everything that fronts onto North County Boulevard, right? The use, in speaking with the attorney, the use that we felt like most likely this could be classified under would be data collection, because it's not a bank where you walk in and there's nobody there, it's just a room with an ATM.
You do walk inside of that.
You do walk inside
the
building.
It's not like
it's not on the exterior of the building. You walk inside a room, there's an ATM on the wall, and it's not even the whole building. In speaking with them today, there's no bathrooms, there's not even a utility sink to fill them up. So it's very limited in what is inside the building. It's almost no structure. The back end has shelving for storage. But the proposal of the Planning Commission, as I mentioned, would allow for the City Council and Planning Commission to consider applications for adjacent, in the event that a building sat vacant from the time it received the CFO, that it could consider alternate applications. The Planning Commission deliberated on that last Tuesday night and felt like there may have been too many unintended consequences with adopting that code. They recommended an alternate proposal that the proposed use, which was a data collection center, would be allowed as a conditional use. It's not allowed as a use at all, but that would be allowed as a conditional use in this retail sub-district. And while I felt like that was a very simple solution, I felt like in talking to the mayor after the meeting, and maybe some of you, I felt like it probably opened up the door to additional unintended consequences. The example I gave was, well, when something becomes a conditional use, you have to look at it as if it's an approved permit. It's a permitted use with conditions. So we live in a very tech-heavy industry area, and let's say that Facebook or one of these tech companies decided they wanted to build a server or a server building on our property or on in the commercial zone. They could come in, take a 50,000 square foot pad, build it as a data collection center based on this adjustment to the code, and we would just say, okay, don't make it stink. So there's some really bigger unintended consequences with the proposal from the Planning Commission in consideration after their deliberation. So we have those two proposals. We've also discussed the possibility of just rezoning this piece to allow for this building to be mixed use. And I think many of you indicated you'd probably be open to that discussion. So I'd like to have that discussion and get your feedback on that. My concern with that is that you don't want to change the uses of this building to allow for something that you may not be that excited about, but you recognize as a tenant, and change the uses of this building away from uses that you may be excited about. So in looking at that table that's in 10.6a in our city code, you'd want to make sure that the list that you're moving this building to reflects your desires of what you want to be found with, what to have found in this building. That makes sense. That's basically where we are tonight. Planning Commission's made a recommendation. I was on the phone with them today, both the property manager of this facility and a representative from the bank, and let them know that this is a possibility that we could be looking at rezoning, and if that's the case, then we're looking at probably at the quickest, at least another 5 weeks. that'd be the quickest. You could do a planning commission meeting at the end of this month, and then the first meeting of October, we could have it back before the city council. So, with all that, I'd love to hear your questions, concerns, or comments.
I'm just going to add to it that, as the council knows, we've worked really hard to make sure that, well, first of all, we recognize that we have a challenging area when it comes to our commercial zone. But we worked really hard to make sure that that frontage along North County Boulevard is in fact for businesses that could generate sales tax revenue for the community. And so I echo Mr. Goodman's concern with what the planning commission did in that it could allow for a larger data processing facility to be here along that frontage. The rezone would allow us, and I'm assuming we could go with data processing or meeting services, because it could technically fall under either one. While it could open up those other two parcels, like Marcos Bertoli or the salon, it could open that whole building up to data processing. I still think that's a better risk than having a data center or a bank move on our frontage of North County Boulevard. I think the other option that was discussed was the possibility of allowing for carving out just an ATM use for the retail zone, so that when you wouldn't necessarily have a data processing facility or a large bank, you're limiting it to that specific use. But if, at the same time, you run into that same challenge where if there is always the possibility that another entity could want to open a similar type of facility right on North County Boulevard. I mean, there's pros and cons, by the way, right? I don't think that that's likely. I also don't think it's likely that someone's going to come want to use that whole building as a data processing center. But we just have to think of those considerations, whatever decision that we make.
That you're, Mayor, you're strong. And when I was working with, one of the things I learned from working with Dave Shop back in the day was that some of these proposals you have to take a productive item server and take what's the most ridiculous proposal you can take with this change in code. Well, yeah, if you made ATMs a conditional use, you could get a big building, a bank of ATMs for every bank in the world. Now, it's absurd, I recognize that, but you'd have to basically allow it as long as it didn't produce noise or too much traffic or they controlled for that in some way. You just have to look at it through that lens sometimes. And so that's why I think that when we have these conversations about what's the unintended consequence of this decision, I do think you have to look beyond the scope of just this building and then look beyond that. And that's why I do think that if you're going to rezone this property, I think that you just have to look at the larger list and say, what's currently allowed in this building? If we move this building to a different district, what is then allowed? Are we okay with that? And we need to make wholesale changes throughout that whole list.
And I would say just understanding, because I think the building has been vacant for so long, I think it's a less desirable parcel than frontage along North County Boulevard.
Certainly.
So what's included in data processing when you say that? Where's the possibilities?
Server facility?
I think more of like a server facility, more like what you maybe have at an Eagle Mountain with the Facebook facility. That's kind of what comes to mind. I mean, that's your big, big server facility. And there, if you go out there, you run out of Eagle Mountain, you just see trucks with cement and every building material hauling it out to that site. It's a huge, huge facility. We obviously don't have that. We also don't want to create an environment where we're saying, hey, build that here. Because we feel like we have other offerings to be there. So I think that's what we have to look at. But I think data processing is narrow enough, and then with the build-out that we have in this area, you're not looking at too big of a facility should one come in.
But you could do the same thing and just add to, if we rezoned it mixed use, we could do the same thing where we instead of adding data processing facility, we just add ATM facility. So the only thing that...
I've looked at this though, because I think the simplest issue would be you look through the land use codes and you say, where does ATM fall in? There's no specific number for ATM. So that's I've thought about that.
I would think it's something more banking. That's
and,
what I
And you
I
could.
Well, don't they allow banking under the...
Not in this zone,
because the commercial corner...
that has a key. So that was an approval for a bank prior to the code being changed. So rather than proceeding with taking of some sort, by saying we approved it, you didn't build this, now we're taking up that ability to build that bank. You said that there's an exception for this parcel.
If America first sold it, the next buyer could not build it.
If they sold it.
If they sold it, yeah. They own it, they can do it.
But I, let's consider your question, Councilmember Anderson, because, you know, we're talking about just this building here. But data processing centers are already allowed as a permitted use, not a conditional use, in the mixed-use zone and in the office zone. So if a company wanted to come build a bank of servers in Lexington Heights, it could. No problem. No hang-up from staff, no, and there really shouldn't be any hang-ups from the Planning Commission and the City Council. Same thing with this other middle zone we have. It's just, it's not allowed on the, in the retail zone out here.
So you try to keep the areas where retail sponsors want to be.
So if they wanted, I guess my point is, if they wanted to build that facility, they could already do that. So if we just carved out such a small area that it, you're really going to build a server room or a data processing center, probably
be larger. They'd be nuts to do it. Location, the space available, that bandwidth, it's just a terrible spot for any
bandwidth.
So tonight, we're not really voting on that, though. We are either going to accept or reject the Planning Commission's recommendation, and then we can tell staff the direction that we want to go. I think one of the things that might be beneficial either tonight or a council meeting or after the fact is, as Mr. Goodman suggested, go through that list of permitted uses in the mixed-use zone and make sure that there's nothing that's permitted in that zone or conditional use that we would not want in that building. I look through it. I can't think of anything that worries me, but I think the council should look through that evidence as well. And we can pull that tonight.
Do we expect AppSource to be here tonight?
No, I spoke with him on the phone. He had prior engagement, but he just say kind of the same things that I said all that what I told you already, that they recognize that this building is a vacant for 5 years, that this is the first application.
I'm just kind of curious. I mean, yeah, what are they saying? It's, I mean, I feel bad that it sat so long. I mean, it's just,
it's a tough.
Do they
question.
Have any? I mean, at one time there was a little restaurant was considered. It's just,
I've heard applications. I've heard rumors of applications for various portions of the building. There was one grease trap that was installed in the building, and I don't know if it can accommodate two restaurant-type facilities. I have to go pull the plans and look at it. But it's currently being used by Marcos. But honestly, this building has, I can't say it in the blank, but there's been some struggles on this building. When Marcos opened, we were really excited about that. But they were very much calling, they're calling the city frequently initially when they opened up saying, hey, when is this east-west connector going to go through the Highland? We really need this road open. So I think that road that's coming through is going to help with the commercial zone. It's also going to add traffic. It's going to change some traffic patterns. But I don't know that they get enough daily traffic to justify some of the things that we would like to see in that building.
And to be fair, one of the planning commissioners brought up the fact that those 699 homes are going across the street in Highland and said there's also the option that you could just wait it out and see if in 2 years it's more desirable.
Yeah.
There are so many.
No, I understand
pieces,
that.
But that's just part of the plans, of course.
I'm just curious because, I mean, I have a piece of commercial property that's languishing and I always try to get feedback. I'm trying to know what's out there.
Well, and this is maybe just my perception, but it seems like the dynamic of brick and mortar commercial stores is changing. It's not what it used to be, not even 10 years ago. You just with the advent of online shopping, it's brick and mortar stores, so are becoming kind of a thing of the past, but what I told the planning commission, I'll tell you, I don't see this spot as being, I don't see any use that can go in that spot that will just move the dial in terms of sales tax.
I totally agree with that. So, I mean, if they just use a portion of it anyway, I mean, it helps, but they sell the other portions of rent plus, there's two actual units there, isn't there?
Yeah, there's two remaining units, yes.
And I assume they're only going to use the front, I haven't seen their plan, but I'm assuming they're going to kind of use the front of one of them and then the other could still wrap around back there if they combine them.
Well, it's two units, they're just buying one shelves, like one unit going all the way back. And so theirs is, the plan I remember, as I recall seeing it, was you walk through the doors and there's an ATM and maybe a door accessing the store, or there's a door on the back to access the store.
Oh, so they are planning to take the whole unit.
They're taking the whole thing, but really they're only utilizing less than half of the building.
Wow. The PCMs are that profitable?
That's my mind, yes.
Jeez, there's one in Roberts.
At a Chase.
At a Chase, yeah, at a Wells Fargo. Up the street.
Okay, it's 6:15, so let's continue this on with our council meeting. Somebody would like to make a motion to you, adjourn the work session.
I'll make the motion to adjourn the work session.
Motion by Councilor Elmore, is there a second? Second by Councilor Anderson, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We are adjourned, we'll be back there in 10 minutes.